Alternative Radio.
Alternative Radio.
Devil, devil, tell us all. Who is the richest of us all? Who is controlling the West for over 300 years? And what crimes did they commit without no fear?
Okay, well, let me tell you, the Rothschilds are richer than every human on the planet, every human on the planet combined.
Join the author of I Am the Witness website tonight as he speaks to Andrew Carrington Hitchcock. Andrew is the author of the book, The Synagogue of Satan.
The Synagogue of Satan.
And they are going to be speaking about the Rothschild dynasty.
They are in control of Oppenheimer.
What is the Rothschild dynasty?
They're the ones who ordered the Boer War.
Find out tonight as Dale Bradford Smith exposes these dark, evil, manipulative criminals.
Rothschild, that's right.
Be there or you'll have yourself to blame for ignorance.
We're going
to
be telling a lot of truth.
Alternative Radio. Alternative Radio.
Every Tuesday and Friday at 10 p.m. live on CII.
It's nothing but the best.
On CII.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome to another installment of The French Connection. Of course, my name is Daryl Bradford Smith. Great to be here with you today. Our date today is the 26th day of August, 2008. And got a great show lined up for you today. Got a short intro period here. I'd like to talk about a few issues. One of them is the fact that people are trying now in South Africa to smear me with the moniker of racist, which is a lie, and I will fight that lie vigorously in every way I can. I have demonstrated for years that I am not after any race, creed, or religion in this battle. I am after a mindset, a group of people who have a political position on the world that is usury, that is criminal, that is dangerous for the rest of humanity. That is criminal Zionism. It was preceded by other movements from the same group. Many of these people happened to be from the Jewish community, but not all Jews are involved in criminal Zionism. That, my friends, is a fact. No different than if you were to say the Mafia is Italian. You could not then say all Italians are in the Mafia. And it would be ridiculous and absolutely unacceptable to make a statement like that. It would be xenophobic. Well, the same is true with Zionism. There are many Christian Zionists in the United States. So we are looking at a crime wave across the planet in banking, in media, in transportation, in manufacturing, in resource control, in government control, that are predominantly being affected by this group of Zionist mafioso, if you will allow that analogy, ladies and gentlemen. Zionism is not a benign movement in this world. And the people who are attempting to name me out as a racist are, in fact, the criminals themselves. And anyone in anywhere in this world, regardless of location, who tries to say that I have a racist bent on my information and on my research are themselves to be looked at as part of the crime gang immediately. You know, I did not make up the fact that 7 out of 10 people in George Bush's administration are from the Jewish community. That is a fact. But what happens when you look behind the fact that they're in the Jewish community, you find out they have a particular view of the world that has been brought down for generations from a group of Ashkenazi, Russian origin, Jabotinsky, Sabbatean, Illuminati, Freemason bent. All of those things are related. And they continue this crime wave, and they are on the verge. They are on the very edge of taking over everything as we speak. And how do they do it? They do it with boom and bust cycles on the planet. They do it with war. They do it with usury. They do it with media control. I have the evidence on IamTheWitness.com on my website, IamTheWitness.com. All of the proof that is possible and all that is necessary resides on that website, and I must tell each and every one of you, if a charge of racist is called against Daryl Bradford Smith, stand up and say that is a bold-faced lie. I will not accept that. And in fact, if it's made again by certain forces, I will look for legal action against them for slander. I've had it with being called names when they don't fit my character. I am a fair and honest man. I do not practice things that are by their very nature against a human family. We don't want this kind we don't want racist people involved in this fight. In fact, many more often than not, ladies and gentlemen, we have found out that the Zionists themselves falsely set up organizations to go out and commit racist acts so that they can say the people looking into the truth are racist themselves. We've had Ku Klux Klan members from this Jewish Zionist community be caught as Zionists after they were exposed in this Ku Klux Klan stuff. And in other words, ladies and gentlemen, these white supremacist groups in the United States are more often than not just groups of deception meant to destroy anybody looking into the crimes of this group. That being said, my guest tonight is a good friend of mine. We started out together many years ago now. His name is Andrew Carrington Hitchcock. We began our research together with a timeline that turned into a book for Andrew. Andrew came to my website and started looking at the things I was posting and the things I was talking about on my radio show, and he began to write them down. And then in his spare time from his job, he started looking into subsequent acts that were going on, and he would email them to me. And of course, I started posting these on my website. And as time went on, together we developed a timeline called the Rothschild Timeline. Well, from that timeline, he filled in the gray areas of this timeline, and it became a book called The Synagogue of Satan. And many of you will recognize that statement. It is out of the Bible, ladies and gentlemen, The Synagogue of Satan. And it is a powerful statement, because when you look behind many of the people involved in this crime wave around the world, they fit that description quite readily. His name is Andrew Carrington Hitchcock, and I'm going to bring him up right now. Andrew, are you with me?
Yes, Daryl. Thank you very much for inviting me on your new show.
It is fantastic to have you here. And, you know, the listeners in the Pan-African area, as well as America and Europe, are still listening. Many people know that you've been on my website for a long time. In fact, your entire book can be downloaded from my website. Is that not correct, Andrew?
That is correct, Daryl, and also there are interviews that go with, we divided the book into 10 sections, and we did an interview on each of those sections, so people can get the interviews that correspond to the 10 sections of the book, and that equates to about 15 hours worth of interviews that we did together.
Well, you know, one of the things that I thought I would touch on today, aside from giving an overview of this crime gang and how far it goes back in history, is to give people an idea of the resource theft that went on under their plan. Now, how far back did you research these people's activities going, Andrew?
Well, it pretty much started off with the timeline of the Rothschild family, and although the book starts a little bit before that, I think that we're really, the bulk of the book is the first Rothschild, if you were, Mayor Amschel Rothschild, and his five sons that were sent throughout Europe to essentially control the banking systems of France, Austria, Germany, England, and subsequently finance opposing sides. For example, France and England, when they were at war, both sides were being financed by a different brother in order to get that nation into debt.
Well, now, the West India Company was part of the Rothschild investment portfolio, wasn't it?
It certainly was, Daryl.
Now, one of the things that I've recognized by looking at this from an overview is that colonialism was driven by these people's investments, was it not?
It was, yes.
So the Pan-African region, who have been suffering under colonialism, can follow the lineage of their leaderships all the way back to this the investment portfolio of a top group of individuals. Now, here's the interesting thing many people don't know. The Rothschild fortune and Amstel Bauer Rothschild started out working for Oppenheimer in Germany, did he not?
Yes, that's information that he started off in. He had his own counting house, but he started off his trade in the banking system, which was basically counting houses back then, working for the Oppenheimer family.
That's right. And now what we do know is the yoke of colonialism was really meant to suppress or utilize the local population to either extract minerals and other important elements from societies across the world, because it took place in Southeast Asia, it took place in Africa and South America, and then put them into the hands of these Western banking interests, and then to be used in industry across the world. Is that a fair statement?
It is, Daryl, and indeed, with the when Nelson Mandela became president of South Africa, one thing that concerned me was we were told that this was freedom for South Africa and what have you, but the Oppenheimer diamond mines and the other mineral control has always remained in their hands. And if we're told that the end of apartheid in South Africa meant freedom for the population there, then why have these mines not been returned to the population of South Africa for their own wealth? Instead, we've seen South Africa actually deteriorate as a society since then, with all the AIDS epidemic and the poverty. It's not gotten any better for these people, and that's because the mineral wealth that that land has is still in the hands of the same people, and it was not the white people over there, it was the Jewish Zionists that were over, that basically controlled the mines over there, and still do to this day.
That is right, and in fact, the relationship that South Africa had with Israel during the apartheid period continues to this day in backdoor kinds of ways. But you know that over 50% of the entire stock market of South Africa is in the hands of this Oppenheimer Investment Group, is it not?
Well, yes. I mean, it even gets so ridiculous as when Nelson Mandela ascended to power, there were two key members of the African National Congress, the ANC, which was Albie Sachs and Yossel Michel Slovo, also known as Joe Slovo, which were both Zionists. And after Nelson Mandela took over South Africa, Slovo was made Minister of Housing. And I can't see how their housing has gotten any better since Mandela came to power.
Well, you know, Mandela has now been riding around the world, looked at by Western press as a leader against apartheid. Now, of course, the idea of apartheid is abhorrent to anybody. Desmond Tutu recently visited Israel with some visitors, and he actually said that the apartheid being practiced in Israel is worse than what he saw when he was living in South Africa. So, but the fact is, Israel still enjoys a rather important position in the political structure of South Africa behind the scenes.
Yes, there certainly, it always will do when you consider the amount of mineral wealth that is there, because Israel is really was created as a safe haven for when these Zionist criminals got caught out, so they could go to Israel, because once they were there, they don't have any extradition treaties with any other country, and they cannot do so because they are supremacist, and they could not have an extradition treaty with another country because it would put them on the same level as the other country, and they believe that they are the chosen race. And as a result of that, it provides a safe haven for these criminals.
Well, yes, it does. Now, let's go back into history here. What we What we do know is that the French Revolution, going back even before that, Cromwell's revolution into Britain was fomented and fostered by Jewish banking money out of Amsterdam. But now we can look into the French Revolution of 1789, and we know today from historical reviewing that great amounts of money were given to the Jacobins in order to undermine the Catholic influence in the country, and then subsequently to that to depose the King of France. That was coming out of Rothschild and Oppenheimer-inspired investment, was it not?
Well, it was, and it goes back to the infiltration of the Freemasons, which was Adam Weishaupt, who was a Rothschild agent, and he put a plan together of how they could infiltrate this society, which was essentially a ready-made secret society network of various highly placed individuals in different parts of industry, the arts and education and what have you. And so it was easy then for them to actually, rather than try and set up something themselves, infiltrate what was already set up, steer it towards their way of thinking using monetary bribes, blackmail and what have you, and then get into these senior positions, into these countries, and turn them over to themselves. And that was really what the French Revolution was all about. And they were warned about it. Unfortunately, they did not heed these warnings.
Well, what we can see then coming on the backside of this was the wars that were created between Napoleon and of course Great Britain. Were set up and financed on both sides by these same forces, weren't they?
Yes, the war between France and there was basically, it was one of the first examples, clear examples, where you've got Jacob Rothschild financing the French, and you've got Nathan Rothschild, his brother, financing the English. And the idea behind that is that the Rothschilds love wars, and the reason that they love wars is because they generate debt. And one policy a lot of people may not know about war, and it's an unwritten policy, and that is that the winner has to honour the debts of the country he defeats. And so basically either way, these bankers will always win, whoever wins the war.
Well, you know, what we saw through the 1800s was infiltration into the elites of every European nation, and during that period of time, you saw the expansion of colonialism going out around the world. For the British, they actually subjugated the entire nation of China through the West Indies Company, and addicted that nation to opium, and then provided the opium to that country for generations, and It was a cash cow, if you will allow that kind of analogy. It was a cash cow for these criminals to rake money off of the Chinese for the opium trade, and then put political control over that trade as well. Is that correct?
That is, Darrell, and of course there we have the Sassoon family that I've got proof married into the Rothschild family later that century, but as I've spoken before on broadcast, we must never forget the sixth. We had five Rothschild sons from the first Rothschild the guy who worked for Oppenheimer, original name Bauer, changed to Rothschild. He also had the six daughters, and I really think that that's the key, and that's what I've been trying to find out. And there's so little information there about them that I think that that's the key, that we can probably find a lot of problem families today that we're unaware of actually being part of this group.
Well, what I'd like to shift to is ideology now, because toward the end of in the 1850s, 60s, and 70s, they were very busy trying to subjugate and control the United States, and there was Rothschild money involved in trying to set up the Federal Reserve Bank, and it failed because Andrew Jackson was blocking them. He did for 70 years block their efforts, but they ended up trying to start the War of 1812. They tried to start back the South in the Civil War. And it was the Tsar of Russia that came to the aid of the North in a couple of instances and said, if certain interests in Europe take actions, I will come out on the side of the opposition and defeat you people. So the Rothschild banking interests and their cohorts had a built-in hatred for Russia's leadership, and that was under the Tsar. But ideologies began to be developed in the 1870s, 80s, and 90s, including things as different and disparate as communism, and we saw Sigmund Freud coming into power then, putting out nonsensical, bizarre even, postulations about human behavior and Oedipus complexes and the rest of it. What we see is a lot of writers and a lot of criminals that came out of the leadership level, I mean out of the working level of these groups, to try to shift the way people thought about their world. And for good example is communism. You want to talk a little bit about the ideology of communism and how it was born within the group of Zionists?
Well, communism is a bit like humanism, and it's putting yourself, your own choices, etc. first, but the key behind that is to really remove morals, and if you remove moral code, then in the end you don't actually have anything, any sort of restraint, if you like, to live under. And if you all go out and do what you want when you want, and you'll end up in a situation where people will just live their lives for their desires, and they'll do as little work as possible, and they'll just, you know, float around accomplishing very little. We have a duty in life to have a moral code and live within that. And the idea of communism, really, there's many different facets to it, and I would encourage the listeners to look up the Communist Manifesto to go into full detail, where you can type into the internet and find that. But essentially, to try and wrap it up in one sentence is difficult, but I would really say communism was about the removal of morals, about the destruction of religion, and it enticed people, if you like, into it was a sexy thing to people, because it made people free from the constraints that their, you know, parents and their grandparents, what have you, had lived under. Whereas what we have today is we have a society all around the world where we have growing crime rates, growing divorce rates, teenage pregnancies, what have you, and that doesn't breed freedom, it just breeds despair and insecurity. And that's what we have whether you look at the so-called capitalist, conservative, Republican-type governments, or the Democrat, Labour-type governments. They've always got that underlying communism beneath them.
Well, and we know that the Rothschilds ordered the development of communism by a man named Moses Mordecai Levy. Now, interesting that when we take a look at the Basel, Switzerland conference of 1897 with the founder. Well, he's credited with founding, but the idea of this of Zionism was in force prior to the name Zionism. In other words, there was a mafioso criminal gang of developers of these ideas, even advance of the 1897 meeting in Switzerland. But let's talk a little bit about Theodor Herzl and his call to arms of world Jewry. That would end up be giving birth to this crime wave we're now living under.
Well, yes, I mean, Theodor Herzl was essentially, he's credited, I guess, as the founder of Zionism, but he was only putting into practice things that the Rothschilds had financiers before, such as Moses Mordecai Levy, who was known as Karl Marx, which is an early example of what we call crypto-Jews, and for the listeners that don't know, that's a Jew that changes their name to that to suit their own country, and of course Karl Marx is referred to as a German, when that's why he had the name Karl Marx, because it sounded German, and Lenin as well, I believe, was Ulyanov, who was Jewish, and he changed his name. Trotsky as well, was real name, that skips my mind for the moment, but he was actually, Lev Bronstein was his real name, and he was actually out of New York and changed it to Trotsky, pretending to be Russian. So essentially what they've done, these people, is, again, history just repeats itself. It goes back to what we said before about infiltrating the Masons. Again, those sort of practices were going on then. The idea behind it was you had this Zionist, or rather Jewish community spread around the world, some of whom were prepared to become Zionists, and as a result, they could do the bidding of these people, because of course the Rothschilds spread themselves around the world, initially starting with some powerful European countries such as Austria, Germany, France and England. And they just built on from there. And the interesting thing that I noticed earlier, just because a lot of people think, well, does Rothschild still run things? But basically, if you look at the first Rothschild's will, there's 5 points to it. But one of the points, the first one, this is all key positions in the family business are only to be held by family members. And we still have a Rothschild in charge of N.M. Rothschild and Sons in England today, which was the bank that set the world gold price up until a few years ago. And so how one independent bank, which is a private bank, can actually set the gold price for the entire world on a daily basis, and we're not expected to think that there's something strange about that, is ludicrous.
Well, we can also see the families of Rupert, De Beers early on, and that has morphed into Oppenheimer, and we see family names such as Goldman, we see the Solomons, we see the Honigs out of Austria. But we also see the henchmen down below. Let's talk for a minute here about the development of that movement, and now how it turned into the Federal Reserve. And see the World War. Let's go into the Boer War for a minute. See, this was at the turn of that century as well, and they had of course, the Rhodes round table was set up. Now, we know that the CFR, or the Council on Foreign Relations, which sadly CII had a doctor from that group on their radio last Friday, a woman named Dr. Pauline Baker was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. That was set up by this leadership, Zionist leadership, as one of the control mechanisms. Now, we have a British counterpart to that. You want to give the people a little idea of what that is?
Well, earlier we touched on the mineral wealth of gold and diamonds in South Africa. Back in 1899, the Rothschilds sent their agents, which was Lord Alfred Milner and Cecil Rhodes. And Cecil Rhodes essentially he's credited with founding, if you like, Rhodesia, which is taken from his name, which is now Zimbabwe. But back in 1899, they sent 400,000 British soldiers to essentially get control of these mineral lands. And a couple of prominent people made statements about this. In 1937, Rear Admiral Henry Hamilton Beamish said about the Boer War, he said, "The Boer War occurred 37 years ago. Boer means farmer. Many criticised a great power like Britain for trying to wipe out the Boers. Upon making inquiry, I found all the gold and diamond mines of South Africa were owned by Jews. That Rothschild controlled gold, Samuels controlled silver, Baum controlled other mining, and Moses controlled base metals. On top of that, the president of the Transvaal Republic in South Africa in 1899, Stephanus Johannes Paul Kruger, stated, if it were conceivable to eject the Jew monopolist, i.e. Zionist, from this country, neck and crop, without incurring war with Great Britain, then the problem of everlasting peace would be solved." And these are statements of one over 100 years ago and one about 80 years ago.
That's right. Well, and so what we saw is that at the turn of the century, they had designs on the mineral wealth of South Africa, but that hasn't ended. They've got the same kinds of designs throughout the continent. But what we did move into then was their second popular scam, which was fomenting war. And they also had a geopolitical demand in setting up a war. In World War I, what they did was they set up a a hatred between, of course, the Kaiser and the Axis powers of Britain and France. And what did we see from that war, and what was the ultimate goal of this Zionist group out of World War One?
Well, I think out of World War One, it was very similar to the Napoleonic Wars we talked about. Back in